You are very welcome to Cawley's Call with me, Alan Cawley, powered by Benetti Menswear, a topical debate show covering all things Irish football, along with 1v1 interviews with top-class sports stars from a wide range of different sports.
It's me that's putting on the green jersey, me that's going to take flak from people to say, you're not even Irish. I was big enough to say, I'm going to take it.
There's many people I've spoke to, they always say, I used to put money on you scoring the first goal, but I've never seen any of that money, though.
And Andy, he says, I want the performances that I got from you in Scotland with you under 16s, not that rubbish that you gave me over in Oslo.
Hi everyone, and you're very welcome back. Actually, you're very welcome back this time to Cawley's Call, because we have had a little bit of a break for the last couple of weeks. I was on holidays, Stewie was on holidays. We're going to tell you where I was in the next hour. I have a hair transplant, I've new teeth, gastric band, you name it. I'll let you guess to see where I was, but we are going to give it a mention in a wee while where we were. But we did take a little bit of a break for a couple of weeks. Stewie was off recording his new album as well, so there'll be more about that in the coming months. But we're delighted to have you back. Obviously, it's a good time to come back as well, because we're just off the back of a doubleheader with games all weekend. So we're going to get straight into the nitty-gritty of all those games when we discuss them. But before that, we do have a surprise guest, more so a surprise for Stewie. So
I'm very excited.
Yeah, well, here you go, Stewie.
A long-lost brother of mine or something.
If I said to you, 2004, Champions League.
Oh my God.
Hajduk split.
Oh my God.
The £1 million goal. What would you tell me?
You're joking me.
What would you say?
Roger Davidson.
A warm welcome to our former teammate. Yes, the man that scored the £1 million goal, Davy Rogers. How are you, Davy?
Quotesy, how are you? All you okay, mate?
Hey, Dave.
Stu, how you doing? You okay, pal?
It's great to hear your voice, I have to say. You bring me back now. It puts a smile on my face to hear you.
Do you know what, lads? First of all, can I just say the work that you've both done over the last couple of years in the media, Cawley's Call, it's been absolutely fantastic. I have followed it, and I'm really proud of both of you. You're a credit, not just to the League of Ireland, but to your families, and for really getting out there and bringing smiles to people's faces, because it's been a joy to watch, guys.
Ah, that's our Rogie. Fair play to you, Rogie.
Dave, I've been working on something recently, right now, because I can't talk about it now. Hopefully it'll transpire into something. I've been watching your fucking goal about, honest to God, I must have watched it about 200 times for something that I had to do. Jesus, it's a great fucking goal.
Would that be that 25-yard tapping, Stu?
Have you ever done that before in any other situation in schoolboy or even in the back garden?
Stu, do you know what? I don't know if you and Alan remember, but the build-up to the first leg, if you remember Eamon Collins, we always used to finish training with a bit of crossing and finishing.
Yeah.
And it's strange, because on the Monday and the Tuesday before that second leg, I don't know if you remember, but I was putting volleys in with me left and right footing in crossing and finishing, and I think Ollie Carl said, "Rog, keep one of them for tomorrow, for Christ's sake." And obviously you pop up in the 79th minute, and it was just do you know what, lads, honestly, not just the goal and what it meant to us as a club at that time and what it meant to me personally, but I think what it done for the League of Ireland as a whole. I think things have just sort of blossomed from then, and it's great that we played our part in putting the league on the map.
Rogie, I often speak to, when you hear like past players and famous players about really important goals, like say maybe people talk about Ray Houghton's header against England, and you often hear him in interviews say, "Oh, everywhere I go, someone always asks me about that header," or, you know, "a day doesn't pass by without somebody asking me." You've become an adopted son of Irish football and the league. And because of that goal, Rogie, and the significance of it, and not only the significance, but how good it was, do people ask you every day nearly about the goal?
Yeah, do you know what, Al? To be fair, they do. I wish they'd ask me or come up to me and say, "Do you know what? You were actually not a bad centre-back in your day."
No chance.
We do tell them that as well. We do give that.
No, do you know what, mate? It is nice, because it's frightening how quickly time goes by. And, you know, I do look back. Stewie just said there that he's been looking at the goal. And I think somebody put it up on social media a while ago. And I actually sat there and I looked at it, and Alan, I remember you running and celebrating as well from the touchline, and just to be with that group of players, to be with that club at the time, that after everything that we were going through, you know, on and off the field. And it was just a joy to be a part of, mate. And yeah, it is nice when people come up and remind you. And, you know, it's something that I'll take with me forever.
It was a special group, Roger. Yeah, and it's mad to think that it's coming up on nearly 20 years. And how quickly the time goes by. And as you say, the players in the dressing room, the staff, it was such a brilliant time. How fondly do you look back on that time? Because obviously, before you signed for Shelburne or came to Irish football, you had your career in England and Scotland or wherever, Holland as well. But how fondly do you look back on your time at Shelburne and the success that we had?
Al, do you know what? For me, it's the best dressing room that I've been a part of. And I don't just mean for quality on the pitch. I mean for the group of men, because that's what we were. We were men. And when I refer to that, I mean about the way we bond with each other on the field and off the field, and everybody was different, but nobody was treated differently, if that makes sense. Mm. We were made to feel, you know, welcome with each other. We'd have our little nights out, we'd have our, you know, golf days. It was just a really good winning mentality that, you know, and I'll credit Pat Fenlon for that and Eamon Collins for creating that sort of identity that we had, where we'd never give in. And I think Stewie will back me up on that as well, that every day in training, it was as if it was your last day. You know, you'd go out there and fight for each other, and you'd look after each other and pull each other through when some of us were going through bad times, which we all did. Great dressing room, Al. Great club to be at that time. And absolute memories, you know. I'm sure you're going to bring us some of the funny stories as well. I've no doubt you will.
Before we get to them, because you were such a brilliant character around the place as well, Raji, but just on, I suppose, the group and the players, I was a young player coming into that dressing room, had me time in England, and obviously you're in England now coaching young players and trying to carve out a career for themselves, and it can be a difficult world. And I suppose when I came back, I used to think a lot of it was maybe just about the football side of things and your ability. But what Pat Fenlon and yourselves and Stewie and the likes of the older lads that I came into that dressing room with, that was the first time I actually understood what it took to be a professional footballer.
Just calm down on the older talk. All right? Just take it easy.
Well, you were a veteran
now,
right? At that
stage. We're nearly the same age now.
We all think we're the same age now, but I was a younger player then. But that was the thing with Roger. And like, you think of Pat, how brilliant he was as a manager, and to think Pat's not even managing in the league now, it's a scandal, really.
But do you know what, Alan and Stu, again, the biggest thing I've taken, if you take your football, your playing hat off, and you put that coaching hat on, the biggest thing I've learned over the years is that it's all about relationships. Mm. It really is, because, especially for myself now, man, I'm really privileged and honoured to be working at Nottingham Forest, and I'm working alongside an Ireland legend in Andy Reid, who has come on leaps and bounds himself as a coach. He really has. He's a clever boy. We're bouncing off each other every day. But honestly, the biggest thing that I've taken from my coaching career to date is how you treat the person first and not the athlete. That's building up relationships, getting the trust of the players, putting the arm around them, not just about on the field issues or it's not about technical or tactical ability, Al. It's about getting the best out of the person. Mm. And I found out, I mean, I'll be honest, I think Pat was very good at that. Mm. Pat was really good at, you know, he'd put you in your place when you needed to, as you boys know. But he'd also back you on and off the field. And that's the biggest take that I've taken into my coaching career, is that if you can treat the person firstly, they'll run through a brick wall for you.
Yeah, and I often say this, Davey, to people, you know, with managers you've had over the years. And look, I've had me fallings out with managers, like many players, and you've had the ones that you're all fond of and all. But to me, it was never rocket science. If someone's good to you, you'd be good to them. Whereas I never understood the players. And we would have grown up in the era, I suppose, in the time when if the manager didn't fancy you were almost shunned, and not even, you were looked down upon almost around the training ground, which I always found baffling. Like, if a manager didn't want you, just come out and be honest and say that. Is that something you've seen a major change in, Roger, say, from your days as a player and even growing up in England and that industry, where now, as you say, you're coaching young players at Nottingham Forest and it is more about relationships and looking after the boy and the human side of it?
Yeah, listen, don't get me wrong. You've still got to have your non-negotiables. Mm. You've still got to have that element of discipline and, you know, the sacrifice that it takes to get to the highest level. But again, going back to my day, especially when I was in Scotland, if you weren't in the team, you were sort of pushed to one side, and it was, you don't get back in this team until you maybe somebody gets an injury or there's a suspension and you've got to make sure you're ready. But nowadays, you know, you've got to manage the whole group, Al. You've got to make sure that you've got that environment where if you need a couple of players who might not have been playing as regular as what they think they should have been, you've got to make sure that when they do come in, they're ready to fit into the system, fit into the culture. And the way to do that, mate, is by managing them. I mean, if you look at Jurgen Klopp, the way he does it at Liverpool, I think you've got every one of his squad players would run through a brick wall for that club. And if I revert back to Nottingham Forest now, the whole club at the minute is absolutely just on fire. From the under-18s, we were in the FA Youth Cup final. Our 23s with me and Reedy, we've a chance of making the playoffs. The gaffer Coops has come in and really just what he's done with the first team and got the buzz of the whole city. It's just phenomenal. The women's team are doing great as well. So again, I've learned so much that if you can, you know, treat the person right, you'll get so much more out of them.
Dave, does that come from, it's an inclusion thing, right? So is that more to do with the fact that football has finally realised that you won't progress if you flog 12 and 13 players, you know, for most of the season? You need to actually play the whole squad, and coupled with the fact that there's now a inclusivity is much more of an acceptable thing here, that you know, if you give someone the cold shoulder, you know, you won't get, you're not going to get anything out of them. You have to kind of include them in what's going on.
Yeah, Stu, it's a massive point, mate. It really is. I mean, again, we go back to our time when we were playing, and you know, you were just sort of shunted and you get on with it. But nowadays, it's the modern day era. And Alan, you're right, mate. It's not rocket science. This game is not rocket science. Mm. It's about getting a core group of people to believe in what your beliefs are. And you know, we talk about philosophies. When you get to the highest level, the philosophy is about winning games of football. Mm. You know, other things that come into place is your style, but most importantly, your principles. And we're really big at our club here on our principles of play. You know, it doesn't matter what system or formation you play, your principles are still the same. You know, at Nottingham Forest, but we play on the front four. We like to go and press teams. We like to be aggressive. We like to, you know, go and attack teams and play a really quick brand of football. And that's come through the whole club now. And I think it shows. I think if people looking from the outside, looking in, can see the progress that the club's made. But again, you know, even Reedy, every day, you know, he'll be telling the 23s with myself, no fear, go and play, go and express yourselves. You know, go and show courage to get on the ball. Go and be positive. That's the way it is now, Stu. It's one of them where nobody's perfect. We'll all make mistakes. But when you make that mistake, are you learning a lesson at the same time? And I think that's the big thing, is that as long as you're learning and you can go and, you know, adjust and be adaptable, anything's possible nowadays, mate.
Listening to you speak, Rogie, it's brilliant, because it sounds like even you've taken so much on board in terms of going from your playing days, obviously, into the coaching and the modern day world, and be adaptable to that. We obviously played in the dressing room. As I say, I was a younger player coming in, but we could have had 5, 6, 7 captains, because of the senior pros. You mentioned that we were all men in the dressing room, and you often earmark around the dressing room, or former players will say to you, did you ever think he'd be a manager, or who's the one that maybe stuck out like would be a manager? To me, you were always heading down that road as a coach, a manager, because the approach you mentioned now at Nottingham Forest suits you down to the ground, because you were much a front foot centre half. You wanted to get on the ball, you wanted to be aggressive, attack. So just in terms of, I suppose, Rogie, with your coaching path that you've taken, was the management thing, as soon as your playing days were coming towards the end, this was inevitable for you?
Yeah, do you know, Alan, it really was. And if I go back to my time when I was playing in Scotland and then over in the Netherlands, just before I signed for Shelbourne back in 2002, 2003, when I signed for Shells, I think there was one of the off-seasons where myself and Jim Crawford, and Stewie, you'll know the mad fella Gago, what a character he was as well, and somebody as well like Stu and Jim, who was very good to me, Alan, when I first came over to Ireland. And I won't forget that. Really took me on board, and and looked after me. But we went and done an FAI youth cert in Kildare. I think Owen here, he was on that one with us as well. But the biggest regret I done then, Al, was that I should have followed through with my UEFA B, my UEFA A Elite, and then the Pro. Mm. But I sort of parked the bus to continue playing.
Okay.
Which means that I've been retired now 10 years. So it wasn't until I was 36 that I started continuing my coaching developments and my coaching journey. Mm. So that would be something I'd look back on and say, I should have, you know, got them badges done a little bit earlier. But at the same time, I'm still learning. I'm still watching. You know, I went out. I'd like to think I've done it my way, Alan. Mm. Which means, you know, I've not had to rely on anybody to give me a job. I set up my own academy in Ireland for boys and girls from the age of 5 up to 15. And that's where I started learning my lessons. I went and managed Dulik in the Meath and District League. I brought Boots Grant in with me, who was phenomenal. Went on to Ballymun United, which was amazing. Really good people. Brought in Bobby Ryan with me. And then I just got my break with Liverpool when I went in as the International Academy Manager. And I think I've done it the right way, Al. I've done it in a way where I've took myself out of my comfort zone. Mm. I've taken a risk. I've moved abroad. I've lived abroad. Left my wife and kids to one side. And, you know, that's been difficult, not being around all the time for the kids. But having the support I've had from the family has really gave me that edge and that desire to really go on and do things my way. And like you said, you know, being at Liverpool for 5 years, you know, being assistant manager for the Indian national team and managing myself over in India, I've probably gone off the radar, which for me is a good thing because I've learned so much, enjoyed so much and been a success. But now I'm back at a club as big as Nottingham Forest. I'm honoured, like I said, I'm privileged and proud to still learn my coaching development and my education. But I'm doing it with someone like Reedy, who gives you that freedom as well, and we're learning off each other, and we're just surrounded by good people, Al.
Yeah, I love it, Roger. Yeah, it's like being back in the dressing room here with us. all I'm waiting for is that song to come on that you used to play before the matches every
time.
The lightning seeds. do. When you went, go on.
I was just going to say, the next time I'm back in Ireland, if Stewie gets the guitar out, we'll do the Lightning Seeds version and we'll get it on the CD.
I remember I actually took over the music, and yeah, that was your track. I'm trying to think who else. I had U2, Even Better Than The Real Thing, the remix.
My memories are the
It was a Match of the Day song, wasn't it?
I have to ask you as well, Roger, when you went to Kildare, did you go with Jim Crawford or James Crawford?
Well, do you know what, mate? Back then it was James.
And Jim as well, that's a private joke amongst ourselves, but Jim has gone on to do great things as well. It's great to see all the lads progressing. But your own journey, Roger, I love what you've done. The fact that, as you said, you mentioned going out of your comfort zone, going off doing different things, experiencing different cultures. I played with Andy Reid, and he was probably the best player, bar Wezzo, a lot of similar players, but Andy Reid was an unbelievable player, and I was fortunate enough to play with him, schoolboy growing up. If you had to say to me Andy Reid would go on to be a manager, I would have laughed because of the type that he was, honestly. But then I spoke to him about 2 years ago as he was going through his coaching stuff, and he was so inspirational in the chat. He was unbelievable. I came off thinking, wow, you've really progressed over the years, really. And this, to have the two of you together, it sounds like a brilliant combination, because the two of you are both learning but so passionate about it as well.
And do you know what, Alan? It's funny you said that about Reedy as well, because we speak, you know, whether it's before training or after training, we'll always sort of reminisce and talk about, you know, Ireland, talk about just different things, football in general. But me and Reedy go back 10 years and we've done our UEFA B licence together. Mm. So that's when our friendship and our relationship sort of came into fruition. But honestly, mate, I'm glad you said that, because he is a very intelligent man. Mm. And, you know, you don't get to play at the highest level if, like Reedy, that he had so much ability as a player, but he has really developed and blossomed as a coach as well. His knowledge of the game is second to none. It's my job to support Reedy in my role as the assistant, but we've got a really good dynamic between the two of us. You know, he's the same. He's got really big ambitions. We both have, but he's he's a joy to work with, mate. He really is. He's very, very intelligent, like I said. He knows his stuff. And we're working with elite players every day, Alan, which is it's phenomenal. I mean, I think this year, out of our under-23 squad, I think we've had 8 players from our group that have gone on to make the debut for the first team in the Championship, which is a phenomenal return.
Oh, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, and I'm delighted for Edie as well. He's a great fella. On the Nottingham Forest thing, Roger, it must be, as you mentioned here, obviously Cooper has come in and taken him from the bottom of the table up third, I think, in the league, and he has the place absolutely rocking. So it must be a brilliant time. Obviously, it's a great club anyway, huge history, but to be there right now at this moment in time, as you say, with everything pointing in the right direction and hopefully maybe getting back to the Premier League, it must be a brilliant time for you to be learning off those great people, but also the first team and the club thriving at the moment.
It is, Al. And like I said, you know, the gaffer, he's been absolutely just a breath of fresh air. He's so energetic around the place. He's so approachable. You know, if he'll come and watch the 23s games, he'll watch the 18s games. He goes and even spends time watching the YDP and the FDP kids in the academy of a night time. He's brought a real sort of...
What's the
belief.
What the YDP? It sounds the YMCA and the YDP and the FDP. And...
Mate, I'll break it down. Youth Development Programme and the Foundation Phase Programme.
Brilliant, Roger. Brilliant. There's that many. Whatever happened to our days when you were a defensive midfielder or a box to box like Stewie? It's all CDMs and sixes and eights and all sorts now, Roger.
Mate, listen, that's something we've all had to adapt to, Al. But, hey, myself and Reedy bring the old school back at times. Don't worry about that. no, but he really has, Coops. He's come in, mate. Honestly, he's so receptive. You know, he'll invite you over to watch the training. He'll come and watch our training. We've got a really good connection between the 23s, the first team, and even the 18s as well. But like I said, mate, the whole club is just... It's full of tradition and history. I'm lucky as well, mate, that my cousin Alan played for Nottingham Forest over 20 years ago. He was bought by Forest for £2.7 million. So even Alan's ringing me up and he's saying, you know, how proud he is as well because he played at Nottingham Forest for 8 or 9 years. So again, for me being here and having that little bit of family tradition as well means so much. Mm. But it's just there's a real buzz around the club, around the city. The fans are loving every minute of it. And look, long may it continue, mate, on all levels.
And in terms, Roger, we all know you're an ambitious fella. We've mentioned the pathway you've gone. You're passionate about the coaching. You also have a connection here, not only the wife and the kids, as you mentioned, and your family here, but to the league and the clubs and the teams, and you know a lot of boys here. Is that the future, maybe, that one day down the line there could be a management role here in the league, Roger?
Alan, listen, you and Stuart know that the league means so much to me. The league was good to me as a player and as a person. It's progressing, you know, absolutely. I've got really big ambitions that I want to go on to. It's not worth doing what we're doing if you don't have ambitions and dreams. But yeah, listen, I'm always open to any conversations, mate. And, you know, one day could I come back and bring to a club what I feel I know I'm good at and what I believe I'm good at? Absolutely. That's always there at the back of my mind, mate. So, yeah, never say never, as they say.
And when me and Stewie are on the sideline at a match, would you be able for the stick if we gave you any stick?
Hey, do you know what? If Stewie's got that guitar out at one of the games, mate, and you can give me as much stick as you want. You know what, Al and Stewie? Look, you've got to have thick skin to do what we do as well. And that's why I'm so delighted and proud of you two for what you've brought to the table. You know, on and off the field with the game, not just in soccer, but in multiple sports. We love what we do. If we didn't love what we do, we wouldn't do it. But like I said, you know, there's some really good young talent in the League of Ireland and some really good talent that's gone on from the league over the years that have good careers and good managers. And I follow it every week, as you know. I follow it every week. I've never stopped following it. And it's got a big place in my heart.
I was going to come in there, Dave, when you mentioned the thick skin thing, because how do you do it? So I mean, and I don't mean that. I don't mean to be funny. Like, you know, have you found, like, when we played, like, you know, we were very lucky to have played for the top club in the country, but there was always that element of uncertainty about the job, right? Yeah, we think we can all agree there. Now, do you feel that as an industry, the game has definitely evolved now, so there's a little bit more security. Or, you know, how do you kind of, what I'm trying to say is, like, you know, what sort of gets you going? Do you bother about that, or do you find you can't focus on that, you just have to get on with the job day in, day out?
Do you know what, Stu? I think you know yourself, and you and Alan know that I've always been positive. I've always been full of energy. I've always enjoyed a laugh and a joke. But at the same time, I've always known when to be serious. And, you know, I joked about it before. Was I a great player? No, absolutely not. Was I a player that, you know, gave my all every week? I'd like to think I was, mm-hmm. you know, even in training.
I think you're doing yourself a bit of a disservice there. You were a very good player.
look, I appreciate that, Alan. I think what I've tried to do is, you know, when you've got to take, we remember, and God rest him, Noel O'Reilly, who got the ball rolling with the FAI and the coaching sort of education program. Noel was the first one, and Jim Crawford will remember them and vouch for it as well. That really gave me an appetite to go on and become as good a coach as I could be, because he was a real gentleman, but he had a real sort of personality that I looked at when he was doing his coaching and thought, you know what, I'd love to be like that one day. And those elements, Stu, it's like what I said before, that it's difficult when you're away from your family. It's difficult when you have a result that doesn't go right, but it's not the end of the world. You've got to dust yourself down and say, do you know what, today's fish and chip newspaper's gone in the bin, let's focus on tomorrow. I think that's what I've really sort of progressed on myself, is that every day is different. Every day brings a different challenge, and you've just got to approach that challenge in a way that you can make it a positive and not a negative. If that makes sense, mate.
You're sounding great, Rogie. You've come round to yourself, I tell you. Rogie, tell me this, an interesting one, and you're well placed, obviously, because, as you mentioned, me and Stewie care a lot about the league, and you're trying to promote it and push it and all that, and over the years, and we do feel it's at a point where maybe something is about to happen, or we certainly see the shoots of something positive about the league anyway, and the new FAI as such. But we often had conversations about this in the house, even when we were living together, that it was always viewed as though maybe England or Scotland, wherever, might look down their nose a little bit at the league. Do you find, now that you're over there or having conversations with maybe managers of other clubs or people discussing players, that young players that might be playing here, that they view the league a bit more positively from across the water?
Absolutely, Alan. And do you know what? It's funny that you mentioned it. The boy James Brown, who recently went to Blackburn Rovers, I know a couple of the coaching staff at Blackburn, and they actually said to me, Rog, we're absolutely over the moon with his developments, with the way he's progressing. And, you know, there's definitely a positive energy from over here in England, Alan, on the quality of player that is available in Ireland. Mm. And when I mean available, I mean there has been that stigma over the years, even when we were playing, that sort of the League of Ireland was looked down on. And I get that. But if the League of Ireland can keep moving forward with the academy structures, you know, with facilities and infrastructure, because on the field, it's definitely getting better, it's improving, and, you know, it just needs to get the heads banged together, the FAI, you know, all the clubs, whoever it may be, because there's real potential in the League of Ireland out. Mm. And it's just a shame that it's taken so long before we're seeing, you know, look at the players who are going across the water. Should they be going across the water at such an early stage? That's debatable. Mm. But what it's showing is that there's quality coaches in Ireland, there's quality systems, and there's quality players that, given an opportunity, they can go on to bigger things.
Do you know what, Rogie? Actually, you'd be really well placed to answer this question, because I remember talking to Pat Fenlon about, and I won't say what club this is, but this is a big, big club, okay? And you used to talk to me about the scouting system at the club, and effectively, for want of a better, they had a room at the ground, right, where basically 10 coaches would sit in a room and just watch games in Asia, Africa, America, all across the world, and they would just take data on a particular player. And if a particular player met that data, they would take a note of them, and they would go on the radar. And the point I'm trying to get to here is, I think Irish players have had to take a bit of a back seat maybe in the last decade or so, because what's happened is the clubs in England are kind of looking across the world here, and they're trying to, you know, they're trying to reach out. Now, I don't know whether that's come, I don't know whether that's stopped now, or whether that practice is still there, or you maybe feel that, that the quality of player that they've gotten from across the world hasn't really lived up to the standard they would have hoped. And is it possible now that you might see more Irish players, you know, come on the radar of these clubs? I don't know, mate. You can tell me, what's the scouting system like at Forest?
Stu, do you know what? It really is. It's you've got a really good group, especially here with us. We've got a really good group of staff in the recruitment department. And obviously, your clubs will have scouts that will be scattered across the UK, across Ireland, you know, across the world. That is the way it does work. But also, I think the days of, you know, looking at data and saying, yeah, this player fits the right criteria, what we're looking for. What happens now, Stu, is that there's a lot more attention to detail that goes into scouting a player now, where scouts will go and watch a player not once or twice. They might go and watch them, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 times before a final decision will be made. Because, you know, how many times were we at training where, you know, a player would turn up and say, yeah, give us a trial. I think we had a few of them over the years at Croker Park.
Well, I remember. You know,
yeah.
There was one in particular individual that turned up that I probably shouldn't have.
Don't name any names.
We won't name any names, absolutely. But I think it's got to the stage where, as the game's evolved, and it does... Listen, the game evolves day by day, not week by week or month by month. Day by day, the game's evolving. The strategy is the same, where you're looking for your talent and you're looking for the right outcomes. But there is a lot more detail now, and a lot more personal detail, where you'll go into, you know, a player's background and upbringing.
So that's what I was going to get at, Davey. Exactly. So where I was going was, a lot of clubs seem to have adapted the money ball system, you know, whereby it's just pure data. They're looking at pure data, like Michelin. We're famous to have done it, like, you know, and they got that at Champions League, and I don't think they've gotten back to it ever since. Exactly, you've kind of touched on what I was saying. Back in our day, the scout would, you know, talk to the mom and dad. How tall is your dad? How tall is your mom? You know, but I think what they were doing, in fairness, they were just trying to get a feel for the family life. What's his background like? Or, you know, what's everything like at home? Is everything okay? And maybe, you know, the scouting system might have moved a little bit away from that. But, like, what, you know, that's the question. Are we kind of going back to that a little bit now, whereby, you know, it's more to do with their personality? I mean, you touched on it as well. It's all, I mean, you can get so much more out of a player if they're willing to, if they have that personality. They might be technically the best player in the world, but their personality could be up their arse. Mm. But if you can get somebody and run through a brick wall for you, that's everything, right?
Absolutely, Stu. And again, you're touching on that point of where, and I did mention it, where it's about the person first and foremost. People can always get better. People can always develop. And some people develop at a later stage. I mean, that's a well-known fact, not just in football, but in life in general, you know. So, but what I will say is that there is a lot more attention to that detail, where, you know, we'll look at, you know, the players' backgrounds, the schooling, the upbringing, have they been at another club, and, you know, what were they like when they were at the other club? How did they interact and engage with the teammates, with the coaching staff? Also, you know, you look at the bigger scale. There's players out there that have never lived away from home. Mm. You know, there's players that might eat different foods. And so there is a really big, you know, that drive of bringing players in. There's a lot of that detail that does go into it now, Stu. It's not just back in our day where, you know, John Doe or Billy or Murph or whatever, with a bag and go, where's the manager? Can I have a trial?
I was just going to say, don't mention living away from home. Alan will start crying.
Roger, you've been so good with your time, and it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. But before you go, do you still have the boot that scored the £1 million goal? Tell us.
I mean, you've got that in a frame. You asked me to sign that.
Forget about the boot. Where's the £1 million? I didn't see any of it.
Do us a favour. Find that boot. We might get £1 million for it. We'll split it between us if you get it.
I think there's £1 million buried under the second row of concrete in Talk Park.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Roddy, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's great to talk to you. And hopefully, as I say, we've watched your journey from afar. As you say, you've gone a different route, but it's been proven very successful for you. It's brilliant what's going on with Nottingham Forest. I know you're very much connected with what goes on here and social media and all that. And when you do come over, we'll definitely meet up. And who knows, we might get yourself and Reedy on the next Callie's Call live show, Roddy. What do you think of that?
Oh, I tell you what, that'll be like having Ant and Dec on a Saturday Super Show, that would be.
Me and Stu are the Ant and Dec of Irish football.
No, we're not. No, don't. Stop.
Someone said you're the Morecambe and Wise. No, yeah.
Listen, Roddy, it's been an absolute pleasure. And look after yourself and hopefully continued success. And we will chat to you soon.
Take care, Dave. Best of luck.
Alan, Stu, thanks a lot. Love you to bits, lads. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
What a surprise for you there, Stu.
Ah, that was great.
Roddy, brilliant. Great to talk to him. And he's flying it, going really well. And I'm over the moon for him. Yeah, he's taking a different route, different journey. He mentioned himself that maybe he's gone under the radar a little bit, but so passionate about the coaching, the management, which was always in him. He had that in him. And who knows? Don't be surprised if we see Roddy on the touchline at a League of Ireland ground near future.
Well, certainly, not with that CV. I mean, with that CV, certainly... he'd certainly be a serious candidate, I'd say, for any job, to be quite honest with you. I don't know what goes into the... I don't know what clubs really look for now when they go into a brief of appointing a manager, but with the CV he has, and especially now that role at Nottingham Forest, now that I think that's a top notch on his CV. So yeah, in the next year or so, you might see him come back.
No, it's great to chat to him, yeah. And he's such a brilliant character, always was over the years. So we'll watch that space, Stu. But there was, as I say, an eventful weekend because there was a doubleheader of matches over the weekend. And I was in Ballybuffet last night. And that's all I'm going to say.
Sorry to hear that.
Oh, it was desperate. It was desperate.
I'm sorry to hear that, Alan.
Both
okay?
teams. It was desperate.
Do you want a massage?
The overall quality of the match, honestly, I don't want to put myself in bad form. There was zero quality. And in saying that, Finn Harps were that bad, they actually still could have scored or should have scored in the second half. Sligo Rovers were hanging on. But I want to touch on the top of the table first because Shamrock Rovers, two tough games over the weekend, Stu. Pats on Friday night, Dundalk last night, team sitting in third and fourth. 6 points. They're the only team over the weekend to pick up 6 out of 6. Is it looking a bit ominous for the rest of them?
Rovers were always going. Rovers weren't going anywhere. They were always going to be there. There's no doubt about that. Like, you know, and they're proven they're the proven league winners. They've been there for the last 3 or 4 years. They're not going anywhere. It was all to do with, you know, who amongst the rest was going to put together a challenge, a sustainable challenge, to really ask questions. And early season would suggest it's going to be Derry. I was of the opinion that it would be Pats, and I was also of the opinion it kind of should be Pats, really, because they went close last year, and I don't think they were hugely weakened in the off season. But I know there's been a change in manager, change in players. So I still think, I still think that chance is there. First of all, what a difference 2 days or 3 days makes, because if you're looking at the league table before Derry played Shells,
it was
a huge spread of points between first and fourth. Mm. And now, as we've seen, and this is probably more indicative of the league we have now. I think we're definitely looking at it. People are going to take points off everybody, there's no doubt about it. I see very little difference. I'll probably take Derry and Rovers out of it, but between the rest of them, there's nothing between them.
Do you think, Stu, and we had this argument last year as well throughout the season, and I think back to Sligo Rovers sitting in the end, finishing up third, and those European slots, and literally just falling over the line. But they went at one stage without winning a game for 10 matches, and nobody overtook them. To me, and I think we're seeing a lot of that again this year, you're saying there that the points will be taken off those teams and there's not much between them. But is that just a reflection of they're not great, those teams?
It's a really difficult one to answer. All I can say is,
from what I've seen so far of those teams, I don't think they are.
The teams, for me, Alan, the teams that are consistently at the top are the squad of players that have been together for a particular period of time. And, you know, you talk about football not being rocket science. Developing the top team is not rocket science either. You need resources, you need the finances, but if you've got it, Yeah, you know, you have to build
and time
a team,
to build them.
And you need time to do it. And that's what Shamrock Rovers have done. When I played for Shells, that's what we did. And that, and you know, we were, that's the reason why we were at the top for a long period of time. I think what we're, you know, and you know, Shamrock Rovers, you know, during this building period, you know, they hit the rocks as well. I remember Shamrock Rovers. I'm trying to remember whether it was 3 years ago or 4 years ago.
2018, Bradley. They got off for his job.
They got off to an absolutely flying start. They were flying. March, April, running away with it. You know, almost a little bit like the way Derry were going at the moment. And then they absolutely hit a wall in May. I think they lost 3 out of 4 games. And Dundalk might have gone on and won the league that year, like, you know. But it was an early stage of the Shamrock Rovers development, like, you know, and you can see what it was a mental thing with the players. To win a league title and to be constantly at the top is fucking exhausting. It's exhausting. There's no better way to do it, and you have to hit a wall to be able to know how to get over it, to climb it and to get over it. And that's what has to happen in the development. So
what you're saying there, Stu,
what I'm saying is that when you look through all the other clubs,
They're all newly formed,
yeah, Alan. You can't look at any one team and say, yeah, they've been together for 3 or 4 years. And they're all, and this is what this constant rotation of players does, you know. So it's a curse for a manager.
I take that point. That's a fair point.
That's why I'd worry about. That's what Derry's problem is going to be. They have to over. Rory can't.
This could be the year that they hit the
wall. Rory can't sit his players down and say, "I'm going to teach you how to win a league title." You can't. You have to learn it on the job, every day, every week, and that's the only way you get to the top.
So by like you look at them at the weekend, as I say, Shamrock Rovers, the form table, even over the last 5 matches, they've picked up 13 points out of 15, scored 9 and only conceded 3. And even the 2-2 draw, one of them matches was against Sligo Rovers and they destroyed them. So they should have 15 points really, but that's the point I'm saying. Is it ominous for the rest of them? Because the quality that they possess, we were hoping and I was hoping in terms of a challenge, it was Derry. 1 point out of 6 over the weekend is a poor return when you think they've played Shelburne and Drogheda. Now, to be fair, we'll touch on Drogheda. They're fourth in the form table over the last 5 games. Kevin's done a great job in the last few weeks and going really well. So I don't want to be disrespectful towards them, but if you're going to win a league, you're looking at Shells and Drogheda thinking we need to be picking up at least 4 out of 6 maybe there. So maybe it was just a bad weekend for Derry and they can get back on track. But maybe they're not, even though they've signed the players, Stu, and to go back to your point, they are still very much in the building phase.
It's very new to them, Alan. It's very, very new to them.
That is
it's fair. I mean, take the signings out. Take McElhenney out. Take Duffy's not playing. Take the other
Dunnigan, Brian Maher, Brandon Calvin.
Take them out of it, and it's a very new squad of players. Like, you know, and don't forget, Rory came in when they were in disarray.
Yeah.
You know, when he came into the job, you know, it was a 5-6 games into last season. They were all over the place. You know, so it's. I think that, you know, they have to. In order to kind of get used to being, you have to get used to expectation. You have to get you, like, I mean, it's not just winning every week, and it's performing nearly every day in training. Like, you know, it is exhausting, and you have to, when you're a young player especially, that is a very, very difficult thing to manage. You know, there's a huge psychological weight on your shoulders. I know players now in this day and age are very much more, their physical condition is incredible. Their, you know, technical ability is much more has developed much more than it might have been before. But the psychological weight on young shoulders is something you cannot teach somebody that. They have to learn it.
Yeah.
And they have to feel it.
They literally have to go through the pain.
They have to go through the pain. Yeah, exactly. To kind of find out how to deal with that and how to cope with it. And they're, you know, and it's not just Derry; it's everybody. It's everybody.
Is this? I suppose there's two questions here then to ask you. Is this a case then of, because the Shamrock Rovers are the only ones that have those foundations built and the continuity in that team and squad built up over 3, 4, 5 years, that's they're so far ahead of the rest, and it's going to take time for the rest? are we just nearly hoping somebody can challenge him to make a title race?
So So don't get me wrong. I still think, you know, Rovers are being asked the most questions. I think they've been asked in 2 or 3 years. I think this is going to be a competitive league title. There's no doubt about it.
After the weekend, but, I don't know, Stu. I thought it was. I don't know.
Look, I think you'll see a response from Derry. I do, and I think I'd be worried about Pats now because even looking at the win, they beat UCD 2-1. But when you look at the goals they got, they got out of jail. You know, the penalty that was very dubious, and there was an OG as well from a corner kick. But you know, it depends on how Pats can react from that. You know, have they been inconsistent?
You know, you look at them over the last five games.
Just to go back to your point on Shamrock Rovers, right? You have to really look at this from. I had this conversation with Richie Shadier actually last year. Look at Rovers. They've no box left to tick anymore. Everything is done. Training ground, the facilities at the ground itself. They've got good resources in place to go and sign players. You know, we're no longer talking about
two games at the weekend. I think there was 13,000 people spread over the two games. They're getting crowds of 5,000, 6,000, 7,000.
That's the model, Al. Everyone has to get to that level. Every other team has got to get to that level. Derry, you're on the road.
Other teams a million miles
away. Absolutely a million miles away. And that's the worry.
Ground I was in last night is a million miles from Tala.
Yeah, well.
Both on the pitch and off the pitch.
Yeah, well, and I'm not going to disagree with that. There's no way you can disagree with that. But you have to look at the other clubs and how can they get to that. Look, Derry, can they get to there? Yes, they can. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. Pats, can they get there?
I think they can.
Sligo, can they get there? Yeah. I think they can.
Yeah.
Dundalk.
Not looking at them last night, but.
Dundalk can as well. So if Bowes can get the redevelopment of Dalymount done, they've got their training ground facilities sorted.
And
DCU.
I'd even throw Shelburne into that, Stu, with the investment in the club.
Yeah, but it's gonna take time. It is gonna take time. Absolutely. So let's tick it off.
We've
got 7 or 8. If you can get 7 or 8 of those clubs, just gradually year on year, getting to that level, And I go back to Shamrock Rovers. In 2003, they were that was a club gone out of existence nearly. Okay. They went into examinership. They hit the same financial troubles any other club has gone through in the last 15 years. What did they do? They said, let's get our house in order. Okay. Rovers didn't get Tala overnight. It took them years to get into Tala. And it was a scrap and a fight, and they finally got there. And then what they did was they focused on training ground facility. They focused on developing their underage structure, as are all the other clubs. And we're not trying to discount any of the other clubs here from the work that they're doing behind the scenes. Rovers have just got a march on everybody else, probably because Rovers hit a wall before everybody else.
True circumstance than anything else.
Milltown was sold by the Kilcoyans under that, you know, and sold for houses. The club was left stranded, homeless for years. They've gone through the shit. They've had to play in the RDS. They've had to play in Tolka Park. They've been all over the Harold's Cross, probably in shithole. They've gone round the houses, and they hit in 2003. Like I say, went into examinership, hit a wall. They were able to strike a deal with revenue and then have never looked back ever since. You can't look at Shamrock Rovers and begrudge them for that. You have to look at them and say, no, that's where we need to get to.
Absolutely. They're the standard bearers at the moment, setting, as I say, flying the flag for the way it should be, the model, everything about them. And every club needs something to aim to. They're the club, and you have to credit them for that. As you outlined all the things they've put in place, I suppose from our point of view, where you're looking at the league table, we're just hoping, can somebody, as I say, it was a bad weekend for Derry. Hopefully we will see a reaction from, I think we will.
I think we will, Al. They're too good.
I have no doubt we'll see a reaction. I've no doubt about that. But just in terms of the other ones who we thought might, you mentioned Pats. I don't think Pats will put up a challenge at all. Sligo Rovers definitely won't. Watching them last night, honestly, Sligo Rovers were dreadful. Dundalk, it's very much building, to be fair to Stevie. So you'd allow him that time. The Bohemians one is so interesting because Bohemians find themselves in sixth, in and around where I think they should be, between third and sixth, 2 points separating third and sixth. They were calling for Keith Long's head last week. Now, I think it was more, to be fair to the fans, through a lot of frustration with, obviously, the UCD thing a couple of weeks back. They were so frustrated. I was at that. They were dreadful. And then the Finn Harps thing Friday night, where Finn Harps go down to 9 men. After watching Finn Harps last night, how Bowes drew Finn Harps with 11 men, never mind 9 men, I'll never understand. But they did. Finn Harps, to their credit, got a point out of Dalymount Friday night, and I think that's where the frustration was born out of. And they were calling for Keith Long's head. Then they go to Tolka Park, who have just beaten Derry, and they hammered them 4-1.
Yeah, I was at, well, I was in Tolka yesterday, and they came out deserved winners. I have to say, Liam Bort was
brilliant.
Brilliant. Oh, Jesus. Out of this world. Caused all sorts of trouble for Shells.
Did he play off the left or behind?
Played off the left, but did all his damage cutting inside. They couldn't mark him. Like, you know, he just started out. He looked like he was given a kind of a free roll. They played up top of Junior, kind of isolated, but he kind of was just staying up high on the left-hand side of the pitch. Brian McManus had to go off early through injury, didn't help either, but he did all his damage cutting inside. You know, got his first goal from cutting inside, nasty deflection, a little bit of luck, but he kind of made his own luck because he was committing players. And then I think it was the third goal, it was ultimately Junior's goal, a bit of a tap in into an empty net, but it all came from Liam Bourne's run through the middle of the pitch. It was an outstanding run. He went to three or four players, and Clarkey sort of saved his shot, and Junior had a tap in. But I think the difference for Bowes yesterday was just a bit of quality from Bort and Ali Coote and Dawson Devoy. The three of them really, you know, caused the damage.
From what you saw, I'm going to ask you about Bowes and Shells because you were there yesterday. Firstly, Bowes. So I mentioned there about we judge a lot of things by social media nowadays. And as I say, I'm in Dalymount a fair bit. And there was almost a divide, it seemed, and fans for Keith, fans against him, whatever. I'm very much of the opinion the job he's done has been amazing over the last number of years, right? As we've said, I felt it was massive. The cup final was massive for him because there was that little narrative beginning to kind of build towards, okay, they've done great. We do great work in the community. Keith gets a lot of plaudits, but they've won nothing. I felt the cup was massive. He had to win that cup just to almost say, look, our work over the last 3, 4, 5 years, and now we've the FEI Cup to show for whatever, and we can build it. He didn't win it. And I just find this year, because of those, the UCD one, the Finn Harps one, there is that frustration. But I don't get the calling for his head crack.
Yeah, no, I don't get that either. But, like, you see, I think Bowes are going to, in the development of the club, they are going to come to a stage where they are, how do I put this? There's a mentality shift, okay? And it's not a mentality shift towards building the ground or the infrastructure behind. That's a completely separate thing. I'm talking about what is the goal of the team at the start of every season. And I always talk about this because when I played and won league titles, whatever, our goal at the start of the season was to win the league, Alan. So there was a mentality there. As soon as one season ended and went into another, I knew I had to come back and we had to win the league title again. So, and every other club, in terms of what they're trying to achieve on the pitch, there's a different goal every year. And obviously, for Bowes, on the pitch, the brief has to be to bring through younger players, to try and maybe year on year improve their position up, and that's perfectly fine. And to me, it looks very clear that was the brief. Absolutely. You know, when you look at the resources that Keith has to spend in terms of bringing players into the club, I don't know what the budget was, but it wasn't huge. It wasn't
in the early days. You mean? Because it's a good budget now.
Good budget now. Obviously, a good budget now because maybe the club has been run better and they're able to tap into those resources. But
I still don't think
there will come a stage.
But I still I still don't think it's a budget where you're saying we should be winning the league and we should be overtaking Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, no, I probably agree with you there.
So
like,
but in around those European positions. Now I spoke to a director about this a couple of weeks ago in Dalymount, and I've had this chat with you about Bowes in terms of, and you're touching on it there now, that there's almost a dilemma where there's the fan-run club and it's successful and all that stuff and they do great work, which they get a lot of plaudits for. But at the end of the day, we're a football club and there's certain fans saying, we're a team that we used to win leagues or challenge for leagues and we want to be challenged for leagues or we want to try and win a league. He told me, the board member, right, who's a prominent board member, that once they get the ground stuff, the club is so well run at the moment in such a very good financially prudent position that when we get to the point where the ground and all that's resolved and done, then we're in a position where we'll have more people hopefully coming in the gates as well, because you look at the sellout matches every week, and they've a brilliant fan base at the moment, that they're then in a position to say, okay, we've all this stuff done around the pitch, now it's time to go bang, we're going to go and attack and try and win a league.
Well, that sounds to me to be a very good model.
I said that is the perfect way to go about it. And I says, but what you need to do is tell that to all your members and all the fans and everybody else that are all in the clear that this is exactly what's going to, this is what the vision is.
Yeah. I get that. Like, I mean, you're always, I mean, fans are going to get frustrated. You're going to get that, Alan. I mean, it's very hard to avoid that, really, you know, and especially when you consider, like, maybe it's a unique year for Bowes. I don't think this season is similar to Keith's other 7 or 8 seasons. I think this is slightly different this year because of the European stuff last year.
There's expectation.
Mm. Alan, and there's expectation on a team that's not ready to live up. I hate using that word overachieve. I don't think Bowes did overachieve last year, to be quite honest. I think I could name 6 or 7 teams in this division who could literally repeat what Bowes did last year. Mm. You know, if the mentality is right, like, you know. But because of last year, big expectation coming to this year, they've lost big players, you know, and so therefore there was a gap. There's a gap that had to be made up. And there's other stuff as well. Looking at them yesterday, they looked in good shape to me, to be quite honest with you. I think that might be a turning point for them. In their season, still a few things that aren't right that need to be improved on, but I think
very much
in the
mix for where we're suggesting they should be around that turn.
Well, when you look, this is a league where if your goal is not to go win a league title, okay, this is definitely a league where you can change your expectation almost week on week, and there's definitely a European spot up for grabs there, and
for four or five clubs,
Alan, absolutely, and you know, I don't see any reason why Bowes can't change that objective to maybe they could nearly. I mean, there's no reason to suggest why they can't repeat what they did last year.
Yeah,
you know, but where I would say is that the mentality thing, and in a way, the team and what's happening and the club have to kind of work together to do certain things, but there also has to be a separation as well, whereby the team. There's a mentality in a football group that's you have to be quite clear on what you're trying to, you know, and this is purely within the football group. You have to be quite clear on what you're trying to achieve. Mm. Otherwise, you'll come up short, like, you know. So I would say I know Keith, he's very frustrated with the draws that they had gotten, because I think he certainly felt there was games that they should have gone and won. I think that yesterday might be a bit of a changing point for them, and I think they might be that in a position to maybe adjust their expectation for this season after yesterday.
Okay, Stu, we're nearly at the end, but I just want to touch on the fact that you were in Talca, so looked like an unbelievable atmosphere and crowd. Shelburne.
Yeah, just naive again. They look back at it, and especially going in a half time, they've gifted Bowes the first goal because it was, you know, poor possession in the middle, gave the ball away loosely, and they got opened up, and it was a nasty deflection. And I think they'll certainly come away from the game thinking that they have to stop the mistakes.
Okay,
you know, and
answer me this.
We're definitely looking at a young developing team. There's no doubt about it. Like, you know, and they are learning. There's no, and I think they will react. One thing about their heads never drop, Alan. Mm. I never saw one player giving out to another player. I didn't see a player's head drop. Constant encouragement. The crowd were very good. The Shells fans, excellent.
Well, here's one. So yeah. Here's one, and I'm glad you mentioned the crowd, because at the moment their home form is what's costing them. And you look at their away matches where they've won in Drogheda, they drew out in UCD, they drew in Daly Mount, they won against Sligo Rovers away from home, they won in Derry on Friday night. So they've brilliant away forms too, but their home form is really, really costing them. Now, we mentioned, I was down there a couple of weeks ago against Shamrock Rovers, unbelievable atmosphere, crowd. Yesterday, another Dublin derby, massive crowd, brilliant atmosphere. Young group, is it a bit of a burden for them at the moment playing in front of the home crowd, that they're a bit more freer to express themselves maybe away from home?
No, I think what it might be is they're a little bit too open, because I think they're at home, let's play our style of football, let's be expansive, let's go and try and create. and they're just getting a little bit caught. Okay, so naturally, when you play away from home, you're a little bit more defensive, you're a little bit more closed up, and you're a bit more difficult to beat. And I think they're caught between both at the moment. So when they're playing at home, they're a little bit too open. So that's just, and it's little tweaks here and there. You've got to shore up a little bit, like, especially through the middle of the pitch. I think they got hurt badly through the right down the spine of the pitch yesterday, like, you know. So that's all it is for me. I just think it's more of a mentality that when you're playing at home, we're trying to play our style of football here. Yeah. Bit too open. That's all.
The other one then, who deserves a mention, Drogheda. They have themselves now into seventh, but because we mentioned there's only 4 points between them and third at the moment, a lot of talk is about Bowes losing good players. Drogheda lost their 5 best players last year. I'm not sure if people are aware of that or have mentioned that. Mark Doyle, Rodgy earlier on in the interview mentioned Jimmy Brown. They lost Conor Kane. They lost really key players that were part of that kind of successful First Division team that did great in the Premier Division. Kevin has obviously come in after losing those 5 or 6 players. They got off to a bad start and people were fearful for them. But you look at their last 5 games, I think they've picked up 7-8 points. Find themselves in a really healthy position there considering the budget. We often talk about budget a lot. And when you think of the budget he's working off, they're doing really well at the moment, Drogheda.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially, I think Drogheda, to give them their credit, have obviously learned from the poor start they've had, you know, and they looked like they could have been in a bit of trouble.
Because you were so impressed with them tonight against Dundalk, weren't you?
Yeah, very impressed, absolutely. And I think that game was the turning point for them. That's been the turning point. There's no doubt about it. They looked like they approached that game and they said, look, let's take the shackles off. Mm. Let's go and play. Let's have a right go. And they did, and they were excellent in the game. And they haven't looked back ever since. And you know, look at their form now. It's not world beating form, but like it's what is it? Last 5,
no, I mean,
they've drawn 4, so the losses are gone now. They're now learning how to
stay
either
in games and stuff,
don't lose games. If you like, there's always there's always been a thing when you played football. If you're looking like losing the game, just try and get a draw of it, like, you know, that kind of way. It's turning, and Keith Long saying the exact same thing for Bowes, like, it's turning those losses into draws, turning those draws into wins, that kind of a thing, like, you know. So,
well, you mentioned it there, that Dundalk was the turning point, because before that they had lost to Derry and Sligo Rovers, and since then they're unbeaten now. I think that's 6, and obviously there's 4 draws but 2 wins as well. But long may it continue for Drogheda, and I think it's all relative in terms of the budget. We speak about that a lot, and for them to finish 7th, 6th, mid-table, I think that would be a really, really good return, particularly after them losing their 5 best players last year. We often speak about other clubs losing players, but that's a huge hole and a huge void to fill, and I think they deserve credit for that. UCD, I feel for, it was always going to be so difficult, and there's a gap opening up there. Finn Harps, as I said, Finn Harps were appalling yesterday. Like, I don't know if in fairness to them, I was thinking about it afterwards, was it a case of maybe they were in Dublin on Friday night and they went down to 9 men and was a tired legs, and we often speak about the bigger squads and the lesser teams maybe suffering. But in terms of the approach of football, there was zero quality on show. Long throws, the grass was long on the pitch. It was dreadful.
Well, that's the stuff I don't like to hear. I think there has to be, you can't have that stuff with long grass coming back into the game again. I can't stand that stuff.
There was no flow to the game, like, because the ball wasn't even rolling properly.
It's draconian stuff it is, like, you know. There should be no excuse for anyone's pitch to be in poor condition. It should all be in you know, and we're coming into the good weather as well.
Should add, Sligo Rovers were no better. It was a poor game overall.
Look, I think everyone's played 11 games now. We're kind of at that, you know, there's always psychological turning points in the season. There'd be 3 or 4 key points in the season where you're kind of looking for teams to maybe kick on or where teams are going to struggle. I think we're at that, the first turning point of the, everyone's played everybody. We're all up and running. I'd always remember as a player, it would take you 7, 8, 9 games to really get into full throttle. And I think
you've always said that.
I think we're now seeing that now. So when you look at the real battle is going to be in that middle tier, isn't it? You're looking at the likes of from Sligo down to Shells. Mm. There's points to be had there. Like, that's
such
four
opportunities
that
for four us.
You go through Sligo, Dundalk, Bowes, Drogheda, Shells can all make fort.
Yeah.
And they all need to be focusing on that. And if they do, then that's where they'll stay. Mm. And you'll see UCD are obviously struggling, And the key thing is to kind of move away from that scrap at the bottom of the table.
Okay, Stu, I've missed you. I was in Turkey.
Yeah, how'd you go in Turkey anyway?
Do you like me teeth?
To get on Turkey.
I did it my shite. Yeah. The plane coming home was like Beaumont Hospital. There was more people on the plane with hair transplants, teeth, eyeballs, gastric bands.
Canadian goose jackets.
I was like, am I in the wrong place here?
Were they wearing black Canadian goose jackets and electric bikes? Were they going up and down the center aisle on electric bikes and scooters?
Honestly, it was unbelievable. But I did have a nice break. I have missed you. It's good to be back. It was great to speak to Raji. Gas man, we've big games the weekend. The fixture I love, I'll be in Dalymount, Bohemian Shamrock Rovers. Hopefully, as you say, it might be a bit of a turning point for Bohemians, that win yesterday, because they're going up against Shamrock Rovers, who are in unbelievable form at the moment. As I said, it's looking ominous for the rest of
them. Well, I said it probably will. It should be a cracker. It probably will be a turning point for Bohs. I didn't say hopefully it will be.
Okay, that was episode 8, folks. Big thanks to Paul Morris. Also, massive thanks to Benetti Menswear for sponsoring the show and looking after us as well. We did miss you all. Hopefully, it's good to hear us and it's good to be back. And we'll be back every week from now on. And we'll have a guest every week as well. So thanks a million, folks. Chat soon. Thank you for listening to Cawley's Call, powered by Benetti Menswear. For more interviews like this, please subscribe to my podcast or follow on all my social media channels.